Good morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. We got the Soup Guys here. We got Nick. We got Wilds. Brian Westbrook joining. Look at the three of you coordinating all your outfits and everything. It's adorable. Coming up on a Wednesday morning, we got a fun show. Hey, did the Seattle Seahawks almost trade away Russell Wilson to eventually get Baker Mayfield? We'll toss that one around. Are we a little bit closer to the return of the NBA season? And Kirk Cousins is going to stop by. Got a lot to talk to him about, but we will start this morning in Dallas, where all eyes are on still unsigned Dak Prescott. He may not have a Super Bowl win or an MVP trophy, but he certainly wants to be paid like he does. And that right there rubs Joe Theismann, who does have all those things, the wrong way. Theismann said this: you're not a top five quarterback in the National Football League. You're a good football player. You have the potential to be better, but what have you done? If I was advising Dak Prescott, I would say, take the money. Nick, what do you think? Is Theismann right here?
Yeah, I actually, surprisingly, totally agree with Joe Theismann here for a number of different reasons. One is, according to the latest reporting on this from Mike Fisher, who's been all over this down in Dallas, the Cowboys' offer to Dak right now is $35 million per year, around $110 million guaranteed, and a five-year deal. And the issue was Dak wanted a four-year deal. He understandably wants a shorter deal so we can have another bite at the free agency apple. And the Cowboys were holding fast a five-year deal, but the money part was mostly agreed to. Now, the latest news on Deshaun Watson might have thrown a wrench into that, because while I believe Deshaun is better than Dak, I think most of the football world believes Deshaun is better than Dak. Deshaun is not more accomplished than Dak. Deshaun certainly has not been healthier than Dak, doesn't have a better track record of winning than Dak, and his numbers are supposedly in the $40 to $42 million a year range, which could reset all these negotiations for Dak Prescott. But the reason I think Theismann is right, Jenna, is because with the signing of Andy Dalton, does Dak Prescott really want to roll the dice on what if I have a really tough stretch? If we show the Cowboys' schedule, what if around the middle of the season, when we play some very tough defenses and some very losable games, what if at Philly in week 8 I play poorly? And then that Steelers defense led by Minkah Fitzpatrick and TJ Watt give me trouble. And then coming off the bye, that Vikings defense beats me. And then a couple weeks later, I have the Ravens defense. All of a sudden, would there be murmurs? Would there be talks? Should the Cowboys, if I'm under the franchise tag, go ahead and put Andy Dalton out there for the week 14 game against Cincinnati? See if we can jumpstart this offense. And then all of a sudden, am I going to be a man without a country? And I do think there is, even though Wilds at times it's overstated, I do think there's value to being the Cowboys quarterback, not only in the marketability, but you have Amari Cooper, you have Zeke, you have CeeDee Lamb. You know they are a team that is obsessed with winning. So at some point, you know, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered, and you worry if you're Dak Prescott's advisor that he might be pushing this a touch too far, Wilds.
Yeah, that makes sense, Nick. I thought you said something interesting when you talked about getting another bite at the free agent apple, because I think that's going to be not just a small bite. I think it's going to be a huge chomp for a few reasons. One is the new CBA, players are getting more money than ever. They're getting 48% of all league revenue. And get this, this is from an ESPN article. That share can climb as high as 48.8% if the league's TV revenues increase, and this is not a mistake, by 120% or more. So they're already kicking around a 120% increase. So where's that money coming from? Well, all the TV deals are being renegotiated, and you've got the FANG sitting on the sidelines. You got Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google. If they come in with all of their cash, who knows what's going to happen to the salary cap? Now, it's hard to predict. The world is upside down. Businesses are upside down. So I think we can learn something from the last round of NBA negotiations. So in 2014, ESPN and Turner renegotiated their deals. Here's where the top salaries were 2014. Kobe's at 23. Joe Johnson signed that big Nets deal. Melo's at 22. Fast forward 5 years. This is the new cap, the new money. And we're at Steph Curry's at 40, Chris Paul's at 38.5, and Westbrook's at 38.5. It's a ton of money. So I know it seems like Dak should just grab it, but that next bite at the apple, Jenna, is going to be a huge, huge bite.
But what you said there, Wilds, was so interesting. It's hard to predict. Nobody would have predicted we'd be in the predicament that we're in now. We don't know what the future holds. So, Brian, I'll ask you, if you're Dak Prescott, you look at this Cowboys offer, what Nick was mentioning, $110 million guaranteed or in that neighborhood. Do you agree with Joe Theismann? Should he just take this deal at this point?
Well, I think Nick, as well as Kevin, have made very good points. Nick basically saying that, you know, you don't want to be greedy. But Kevin also saying there's a bunch of money on the back end if you can get a four-year deal versus the five-year deal. And so for me, as a former player, I always think about it in this way. And how much risk do I want to take? Dak took an awful lot of risk this past season by just playing, by going out there and playing without a long-term deal, and he performed well. I think at this point, if you're saying I can get 35 a year and 110 guaranteed, to me, that sounds like an awful lot of money, unless you can get $42 million a year and a lot more guaranteed. And so I think this, you get paid off for production and potential. He produced a bunch last year, Dak did, and he has more potential to be better with more weapons offensively with CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, as well as Zeke, and a better coach. I think you'll have much better numbers, but at some point, you have to say enough is enough. I don't think there's a rush at this point because the deadline is July 15th. And so I would take it right up into the deadline. Remember, Zeke didn't get his money until 4 days before the season started. So if I'm back, I'm not rushing to the point where I'm going to sign it today, but I'm certainly going to take it right up until that deadline and then see what Jerry's willing to do.
But, Nick, it's not like this has just been going on for a couple months now. We've been having this discussion for 15, 16, 17 months already. I'm starting to feel a little nervous here. Is there a possibility maybe the Cowboys are too? Is there a chance this deal doesn't actually get done?
Oh, it's absolutely on the board that July 15th comes and goes. Dak Prescott has not agreed to a new deal, and he plays this year under the franchise tag. And I'm sure what Dak's thinking is, well, the franchise tag for me this year is $31.5 million. If they were to do it again next year, it's $37 million. So now I'm at $69 million over 2 years. That's $35 million per year. Both of those are fully guaranteed, assuming you get franchise tagged again. And then I hit free agency, and maybe some of that FANG money that Wilds alluded to is available to me then. Maybe I can have the best of all worlds. And that is, we have Kirk Cousins coming on the show. That is what Kirk did. Franchise tag me. Franchise tag me. Now I get a fully guaranteed deal. Now I extend that deal early. And Kirk's going to end up one of the wealthiest players in league history. So I understand the reasoning there. And we can talk to Kirk about this, but if not for the grace of God, there go your career. And there is the concern that in this specific sport, that is an enormous risk to take and an enormous gamble. And unlike Kirk, who I think went from a somewhat dysfunctional franchise in Washington to a well-run franchise in Minnesota, you go from the Cowboys to, if you play this year under the franchise tag and they say, you know what, we see where this is going. What can we trade Dak for a couple first-round picks? Is Jacksonville done with the Gardner Minshew experiment and they're excited to pay him $40 million a year? You could make an argument $35 million in Dallas could be worth more and could be more fulfilling for Dak than $40 million elsewhere, Wilds. And so I understand where he's at, but I think it's a dangerous game he could be playing, Kevin.
Nick, I'm going to throw it right back to you. What do you think Mahomes' next salary is going to look like? His full contract. I don't think you can give me a number that I'll be shocked at.
Yeah, so let's assume it's 5 years. 5 years, 5 times 45. 5 years, $225 million, $170 million guaranteed, and I'd be happy. Ooh. I'd take it.
That's a deal.
I mean, I think that if Deshaun Watson's talking about 40 to 42, what do you do? And by the way, everyone's bringing up Mahomes. I'll be very quick here. If Lamar has another excellent season, Lamar Jackson's next in line, too. He's won the MVP. He's gotten his team to the one seed. If he stays healthy and plays, doesn't have to win the Super Bowl, plays one good playoff game, Lamar also, which is Wilds, to your point, we might have to have a new rule about quarterback salaries. They account for 15% of your cap, but you can pay him whatever. You mentioned that yesterday. I wonder if the league, Jenna, moves towards that at some point.
I'm telling you, in my next life, I'm coming back as a top three quarterback in this league. It'll be easy. And all that money.
Don't even need to be top
three. Take a break. Coming up. No, how, apparently you could be Dak. How close is Russell Wilson to becoming a Cleveland Brown? Say that a couple times fast. Next on First Things First.
A healthy lifestyle should be easy, right? Eat veggies, drink green smoothies, exercise, get your heart rate up, and do yoga to bring your heart rate back down. Well, maybe not so easy, but there is something that helps improve everything, and you can literally do it with your eyes closed. It's sleep. Sleep Number knows what it takes to sleep your best. The Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed lets you choose your ideal firmness, comfort, and support on each side, your Sleep Number setting. It's the perfect solution for couples. These beds are so smart, they respond to your every move and automatically adjust to keep you sleeping comfortably all night. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. And now, for a limited time during the Memorial Day sale, save $1,000 on the new Sleep Number Special Edition Smart Bed, a queen, now only $1,799. You'll only find Sleep Number at Sleep Number stores or by visiting www.sleepnumber.com.
All right, gentlemen, let's play a little drawing a blank, and we're going to start with a doozy here. NBC analyst Chris Sims said yesterday that before the 2018 NFL draft, the Seahawks were rumored to have offered Russell Wilson to the Cleveland Browns in exchange for their number one overall pick, presumably to draft Baker Mayfield. So, Nick, Seattle trading Russ to Cleveland in 2018 for their number one pick would have been blank.
On brand. Have you seen how Seattle's run their offense the last forever years? They act as if they don't have a great quarterback. They act as if passing the football is only something they should do under the most dire of circumstances. It's why they lost in the playoffs 2 years ago. It's why they lost a handful of games last year. Is they act as if their quarterback is just a cog in the wheel instead of the entire damn engine. And so I would have been happy for Russ. I mean, Russ got his money, but Seattle paid for a Lamborghini and then never wants to take it out of the garage. So I would have been happy for Russ if he would have gone somewhere that would have used him like he is who he is, which is the second best quarterback in football. And it would have been nice to see Russ with Odell Beckham, by the way, if that would have happened. Seattle, instead, they've got the second best quarterback in football and won't acknowledge it. So I think it would have been on brand, Brian Westbrook.
You know, Nick, I think it would have been game changing. And I'm not talking about for Seattle, because I think they have a system that you can go in there, you're going to run the football, and just like you mentioned, you're only going to pass the ball when you desperately need it to try to win a football game, which Russell Wilson has done a great job of doing. But it'll be game-changing, of course, for the Cleveland Browns. They got a proven winner. They would get a Super Bowl winner, a guy that can make confidence inside of your franchise, a reliable guy. He also would have saved Hugh Jackson's job. Hugh Jackson would still be the coach of the Cleveland Browns Russell Wilson was there, because he changes everything, the culture, the character of that football team and organization. So it would have been a game changer for really both squads. Really, not both squads, just the Browns, because the Seattle Seahawks would have been the same exact team without the experienced quarterback, because they run the football 54% of the times each single game.
I think we need to come up with a new title for these stories. They're like zombie rumors. It says rumors, but it's from 2 years ago. So it's like a zombie rumor that all of a sudden arises from the dead. Like, here's a rumor from 2 years ago that you guys can sink your teeth into. I think it's bizarre. It's a bizarre story. But was this whole thing a salary dump, Nick? Because when Russell Wilson went to the Super Bowl, I think he had the 61st highest salary and the 58th highest salary. So it's just more proof that we should have a QB-only salary cap so the great quarterbacks can stay with their team and build a brand. I think that's best for the entire league.
Yeah, it would have only been about trying to kind of reset the clock on your quarterback salary and to try to have another excellent quarterback they thought in Baker that can play at a very high level but make almost no money. This is the move that I said a year ago I thought the Los Angeles Rams might do, which is let Goff play out his deal, trade him away at the end before he got expensive so they can keep reloading all the talent. Instead, they foolishly gave him a contract extension that they now regret. Now, Russell Wilson, you should never trade, but Jenna, given how they use him, it's not shocking to me they considered it.
Wiles, I very rarely disagree with you. I love rumors. I've got like 25 girlfriends. All we do is talk rumors. It works for me. I'm surprised it doesn't work for you. Let's move 25. On. Speaking of Baker Mayfield, Marnie, The Athletic Marks. Released an article yesterday proclaiming Mayfield. I do have more than two friends. I don't want to talk about it. Okay. The Athletic released their article yesterday. Okay. So they proclaimed Baker Mayfield will only have himself to blame if he doesn't succeed this season. I'm still blaming Freddie Kitchens. Nick, Baker's ceiling in year three is blank.
All right, so I probably went maybe a little against the spirit of the question. I was very specific on this. 35 touchdowns and 4,400 yards passing. That's his ceiling this year. I think his ceiling is to be have, statistically speaking, one of the six best years of any quarterback in football, to build on the success he had his rookie year. We're all going to pretend like last year didn't happen, that it was just a Freddie Kitchens abomination, that he infected and polluted everything, that Baker's turnover issues are going to subside because they didn't exist when he was in college. So 35 touchdowns, which usually that's going to give you about third or fourth in the NFL. 4,400 yards, which to these days is probably sixth or seventh in the NFL. Brian, to me, that's his ceiling for the season.
I'm absolutely sure Baker Mayfield would take 35 touchdowns and 4,400 yards. I think his ceiling truly is the third seed in the AFC. I mean, he's still probably going to be behind Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. I, however, think he could be the second best quarterback in the AFC, provided all the weapons that he has, and that's behind Patrick Mahomes. Of course, he has any offensive weapon that any quarterback in the league would desire. Two very good wide receivers, a very good tight end, and two running backs that can run the rock to protect you from the pass rush. And so to me, this is exactly what Baker Mayfield would want. You want a team that can go out there and score a bunch of points. And just like they said in The Athletic, this all comes down to Baker Mayfield being a quality player, being a guy that can understand the culture, and Kevin Stefanski coming in and breathing that culture into him and making him understand it right away from day one. And I think Stefanski would be the guy to be able to do that.
Second best quarterback in the AFC. So it goes, in your mind, it goes Stidham, Baker, Mahomes. That's an interesting list, Brian. I'm going with mandatory here, Nick. I'm going with mandatory. And I did not get my laminated Nick Wright schedule. I just have this one. But you've got the Browns going. That's too darn small, Nick. You've got the Browns going 11-5.
11-5.
I think that's mandatory because they're going to have to look up and be like, is this our guy? Andrew Berry's not married to him. Kevin Stefanski's not married to him. No one in the organization really is like, this is our guy. So I think they have to make the playoffs to prove that he's the guy so he can get that next contract.
All right, let's move on to the best quarterback duel of the season. About as pass happy as you can get with this one. Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees, week 15. This, according to For the Win, first career meeting between the two Super Bowl MVPs who are separated by 17 years of age, these two. Nick, Mahomes versus Brees being named the best QB duel this season is blank.
It's calendar dependent, and because this game is scheduled to take place in December, I'm going to say our friends at For the Win got it wrong. I have real anxiety about whether or not Drew Brees is going to look like the Drew Brees we're used to by week 15 of this season. Last year, I think, oddly enough, Brian's talked about this, he might have been aided a bit by missing those five games. We've seen his arm kind of wear down over the course of each of the last couple seasons. So because this game is so late in the year, I think Mahomes Watson could be a better matchup in week one. And I think Mahomes Lamar Jackson, everyone's just, I mean, Lamar Jackson's watching the show like such disrespect. Brian's got Baker already better than him. I'm now saying For the Win's got Mahomes Breeze as the quarterback matchup of the year. Chiefs Ravens is week three. So I say calendar dependent, Brian.
You know, I say that Mahomes and Drew Brees being the number one, the best quarterback duel is trolling. Are you serious? You mean Drew Brees in week 15, just like you mentioned, having the ability to be productive all season long and still productive in week 15 is better than Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes in week 3, is better than Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes in week 1, Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson in week 3. Come on, that just doesn't make any sense. We also have Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott in week 3 that I would probably want to see as well. I think this is a troll job, but now it also has us talking about it, so it probably makes sense for the publication there.
Nick, you know when you go to a very nice restaurant that everyone recommends and you think is going to be great, and then say, hey, how was it? You're like, oh, it was really good. But you never are really super passionate about it. You're passionate about those little restaurants that you find, those little hole in the walls that you didn't think were going to be great, and they're spectacular. That's week 4. Mahomes versus Jarrett the Javelin Stidham. Where that's the quarterback duel America wants to see.
You couldn't even get through it.
There it is. Oh yeah.
Wild, you had this whole lead up. You had this whole lead up and you broke character. And what ruined you was you decided to throw in the javelin.
It's the nickname.
If you had just said Mahomes Stidham, I think you'd have made it through
yes.
it. But instead you go Jarrett
yourself. Wilds with
you.
That nickname.
Shameless Homer. Kevin Wilds couldn't
really
even
throw
get
through the bit.
The throws javelin. It like a javelin. Stabs his receivers in the heart as they miss Tom Brady. Jenna, take it away.
Find some stuff please. Out.
I'm taking Jared it. I'm javelin. Taking it. We got to take a break. Coming up, Vikings Pro Bowl quarterback Kirk Cousins will join us. That's next. Stay with us. Welcome back. Now joined by Vikings Pro Bowl quarterback Kirk Cousins, who maybe 8 seconds before we came back on the air here, I heard a bunch of screaming in the background. So I know you, my friend, are going through exactly what I'm going through at home. You got two little boys. Is one right off camera there?
That's right. Yeah, Cooper's right off camera. Come here, Cooper. Say hi to the lovely people at
go.
Fox Sports.
Oh, what's up, buddy?
This is Cooper. He's my 2.5-year-old.
That's really
Keeps
cute.
Me busy. And then we've got Turner as well. He's a year old. He's on a walk with my wife right now. So Cooper and Turner are making this COVID-19 time very busy, but it's been fun. And we're having a lot of daddy son time, aren't we, buddy? All right.
So quarantine's Thanks, been good, Kirk?
Yeah, we've been good. We're blessed. Fortunately, I don't have anybody close to me who has contracted the virus, but certainly feel for how much this has affected so many people's lives, and just trying to do the best we can to get things back to normal as soon as possible.
Kirk, I'm glad to hear that you and your family are well and safe, and obviously it's a beautiful little boy, one quarter of your in-house family. To turn the page to football for a bit, I'll admit I was very surprised when I got the text alert. Kirk Cousins has agreed to a contract extension with the Vikings because given the fact that they didn't have the right to franchise tag you after this year, or they weren't going to be able to, I just anticipated even if you wanted to stay with Minnesota, you were going to allow your contract to expire to maximize dollars as much as possible. Why did you choose to take the contract extension to stay in Minnesota a year earlier than you had to make that decision?
Well, to make the decision now opened up some cap space for the team. So that certainly gives us an ability to win, which is what it's all about, especially at this stage in my career. And I didn't need to look around. Minnesota is where we want to be. That's where I want to play. And just didn't really feel a need to prolong the inevitable. And so it was great for the team. Great for us that the team was willing to make it happen as well.
Kirk, you said you've got 2-hour virtual meetings 4 days a week. How have those been going? And do you think that you can get real chemistry with your team in a virtual setting?
Well, the chemistry part is a little difficult, but it's been productive. We've been getting through all of our installs and the technology is amazing. We can ask questions and have great conversation. We pretty much are, in our individual position meetings most of the time, although we do break into team meetings on occasion. And we're getting a lot done. I think it'll be important as we get closer to July, if the rules around the country start to loosen up, that we as players find a way to connect with each other, get to know some of the new draft picks and spend time together, because you want to make up for lost time this spring.
For the teams who have their quarterbacks and receiving core sort of intact returning, I suppose the chemistry is not an issue for you. You did lose Stephon Diggs to Buffalo this year. You texted him. You said he's as good as any receiver you've ever played with. Can you talk to us about the void that not having him leaves on your team now heading into this season?
Well, it is tough to lose a player of his caliber, and that's why with the first round draft pick, we drafted Justin Jefferson from LSU. You know, we understood that it is not easy to replace a Stephon Diggs, and so you go use a first round draft pick to try to do that. So, you know, Justin, I'm excited to get him in here again. That's one of the challenges with this time, is you don't get the work with a guy like Justin to get him caught up to speed. So, the message to Justin has been, hey, you've got to be getting yourself ready best you can. But we've been watching a lot of cut-ups from last year. And if Justin's watching those cut-ups, he knows he has big shoes to fill. And I'm excited for him to get the chance to fill them.
Kirk, for you, listen, it's not a secret. The fair or unfair knock on you had been really good numbers against the best teams, doesn't have the best games. So how vindicating was it for you to go into New Orleans in your first playoff start in a few years, go toe-to-toe with Drew Brees, not only win the game, but throw the game-winning, you know, walk-off touchdown pass to our friend of the show, Kyle Rudolph? What was that moment and possible vindication like for you?
You know, it's a special moment. Anytime you win a playoff game, that's just not easy to do, especially on the road. And that was my first one. Hopefully it won't be my last, but that was my first playoff win. So as a quarterback, that's a big step in your career. Through my entire career, going back to high school, through college, through the pros, it's always been a challenge to climb a mountain, try to achieve a goal. And then when you get there, you realize there's just more mountains to climb. And winning a playoff game was much the same way. You've been chasing that goal. You accomplish it. And then you realize really the ultimate goal is a world championship, and that's where we're still trying to get to. So that's the goal now for 2020 and beyond, is to try to, you know, win more playoff games and get to the final game and then win it.
But Kirk, building off of Nick's question, you've got a rematch of that game on Christmas. Now, when the schedule comes out, what's your process? I know that you know your opponents, but do you look at all of the games and say, all right, here's my totality plan for the entire season? Or is it more a week by week, or there's certain games that you circle, like I'm going to train extra hard for this? What's your process?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. Like you said, we know our opponents before they release the schedule. So it's not so much who we're playing, but when, what time of day, what day of the week, and what's the order. And so you always look, okay, who's week one? Who do we start with? And under what circumstances are we starting? So we're at home against Green Bay. Obviously not a lot of need to look beyond a week one game at home against Green Bay. I mean, that's a big one to be able to get off to the right start. But certainly you mentioned it, Christmas Day on a Friday against the New Orleans Saints. I don't think I played on a Friday since high school. So that'll be fun, something different. To play on Christmas Day in front of a national audience will be a special opportunity. And then you do look at, you know, what are some of the night games, some of the road games. You know, going to Seattle on Sunday night will be exciting. And then really just understanding that we got to find a way to win as many as we can. You always say, you know, try to win all your home games, steal a few on the road. And if you can do that, usually you'll find a way into the playoffs. But certainly the goal is to win the NFC North and by doing so, get a home playoff game.
Kirk, these are crazy times we're living through right now. We have a global pandemic. Yes. Also, yes, it's kind of been a crazy offseason in the NFL. Tom Brady left the Patriots, Gronk unretired. This could be Aaron Rodgers last season in Green Bay, talks of him leaving. As a player who's been watching everything this unseason, was there one move, one trade, one retirement or unretirement that happened that surprised you the most that you just didn't see coming?
Well, it's been fun that even when games aren't being played, there's still football news and football discussion, and it's worthwhile discussion, whether it's free agency or the draft. I think that's fun. I think the NFL has done a great job of making the offseason very watchable and very interesting. And I found free agency specifically at the quarterback position this year to be very intriguing because of the big names that usually aren't there and because of the movement that happened. And I think of Tom Brady going to Tampa probably as the one that I just didn't see happening. You know, a lot of people would ask me when my season ended, what do you think is going to happen? And my expectation was that he would stay. But the fact that he goes to Tampa just goes to show once again how it's hard to predict what direction things will go in the NFL, and you have to be ready to react. And you can never think that you have it all figured out. You know, this league is a crazy league.
Kirk, one of those free agent quarterbacks is Dak Prescott. Now, he got franchise tagged, which is very rare for a quarterback. It would be damn near unprecedented if not for the man we're sitting across from, Kirk Cousins. It's kind of a multi-layered question here. When you first were franchise tagged in Washington, did you believe, okay, this is a placeholder, a deal's going to get done, and obviously ended up not getting done? And the second part is, what advice would you give for Dak Prescott, as you're one of the only people at his position that's gone through this?
Yeah, for me, the franchise tag was just the natural next step. I didn't know, you know, where it would go from there month by month, but it was certainly the natural next step. So it made sense when it was placed on me, really both years. My advice to Dak would just be, he's in a good spot. I think if he has a long-term, you know, opportunity that he signs, that's a win for him. I think that's a win for the Cowboys. He's played himself into the position he's in, but I think he knows as well that were he to play on the franchise tag, that's not the end of the world. And I think whether he plays on a one-year deal or a long-term deal, I think he's going to be a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys for a long time. And it's just a matter of, you know, figuring out the contractual details around that. But I don't see a world where Dak Prescott isn't the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys for many years to come. How we get there, you know, we can talk about, but I think he's the long-term guy there. It's just a matter of how.
Kirk, you were taken in the fourth round. In this latest NFL draft, we had some big names taken in the first round, and we had some quarterbacks going a little bit later. What would be your advice to those quarterbacks taken a little bit later and how they can succeed in the league?
I appreciate you asking that question, because in 2012, I was that guy, and I was looking for that advice, and I'm grateful that everything did work out for me. I think the key for those players is to just understand that, you know, it would have been nice to be a first round pick. You do have a little bit more of a red carpet, and you're going to get a few more opportunities to prove yourself than if you're a later round pick. But as a later round pick, you got to be ready to go. When you do get a moment, whether it's a rep in practice or a moment in a preseason game, you've got to be ready to seize it. And so whether it's virtual meetings or when we do get back together at practice, do all you can to wear out your coaches, to learn the playbook, so that when your opportunity comes, you are ready. And understand that, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. Now, you're going to have your ups and downs. Just stay the course and remember that tough times don't last, but tough people do. And if you can be a tough person mentally and physically, usually good things happen to you in this league.
Same advice I give Nick every single morning before we start the show. Kirk, we're going to have some fun, do a little rapid fire questioning right now. Here we go. Question number one. Which team scares you the most? Not necessarily the best team, but the team that you dread playing the most on Sundays.
Ooh, good question. I'd say just the Chicago Bears defense has done a great job against me the last couple years. And overall, I just think they're a great unit, and I have so much respect for them. And I think you got to be ready to go when we play them.
All right. Name a skill you wish you were better at.
I wish I was a little more agile, a little quicker, a little more quick twitch. But I play to my strengths, and I know I'm a pocket passer, and so I try to make it work.
All right. What age do you want to retire? I'm looking for an actual number now. What age do you want to retire?
Well, I guess that's a two-sided question. I'd like to know that I'm healthy enough and my body feels good that when I'm 45 years old, I can still do it. So I guess I'd want to retire at a much older age. But realistically, I'd like to play out, you know, my 30s. And I say that, but I've always viewed this career as year to year. So I really feel like every year I have to reevaluate, you know, where's my body at? Where's my mind at? Because it is a grind. But certainly the hope, the expectation is to do what, you know, Tom and Drew have done, and that's play into their 40s and look good doing it. So that's what I'm going to try to do. We'll see if my body can hold up.
All right. I got a couple trash talk related questions for you. First one, has any player ever used "you like that" against you? And if so, who?
Yeah, I wish I knew who. Usually it's pretty common when I get sacked and I'm pulled down by a group of guys and I'm on the bottom of a pile. They'll kind of say, you know, yeah, Kirk, you like that, as they get up and walk back to the huddle. Sometimes you'll hear it in warm-ups. You know, usually people use it in good fun. And at the Pro Bowl, you know, I had a few guys on the bus. When I sit down on the bus with the rest of the NFC team, you know, Chandler Jones will say, you know, you like that on the bus. So it's fun. I think for the most part, guys thought it was hilarious, and I probably get more respect for it than anything else.
Minnesota Viking and Pro Football Hall of Famer John Randall was famous as a D lineman for just saying the craziest things to the opposing quarterback pre-snap. Who is the chirpiest or loudest or most notable D lineman that you face that it's like for 3 hours, I'm going to be hearing this guy talk, talk, talk while I'm trying to call out the play? Who's that guy in today's game?
You know what? Nobody's really coming to mind right now. Chandler Jones, who I just mentioned, maybe a little bit, but that goes back even when he was in New England, just in pregame, just noticing him kind of having fun. You know, I think Za'Darius Smith last year, I remember one time we're playing at Lambeau and I completed a short pass to Chad Beebe, and Chad ended up taking it like 70 yards down to the, you know, inside the 5 yard line. And so the crowd went quiet and I'm kind of walking, and he was in the backfield with me. So he's walking with me down to where the ball is, and I'm thinking he's going to be ticked off. And he kind of bumped me on the play. So he looks at me and he's like, "Are you good?" I said, "Yeah, I'm good." But it kind of threw me off that he was like concerned for my well-being as we were going down to the next play. So, you know, just as much as there's trash talk, there's also That's guys awesome. Who are just kind of doing their thing, and they know you got a job to do too. And we're just kind of both at work together, going at it against each other.
I love it. Great story to end on. Kirk, good luck quarantining. Good luck Zooming. Good luck with the little guys at home. We really appreciate you hanging out with us today. Good luck this season.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Blessings to you all, and look forward to hopefully getting back to a normal season this fall.
You got it. All right, we got to take a break here. First things first, coming up, if LeBron wins the title this season, will it come with one of those little shift F8s? The asterisk next on First Things First. Welcome back. Tomorrow on First Things First, we'll be joined by newest Saints wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders, talking his new quarterback Drew Brees, his former quarterback Big Ben, and everything in between. And that is tomorrow right here on First Things First. Time now for stories to start your morning. So momentum is building towards return to the NBA season, but if it happens, the big guy, Shaq, says the champion this year should have an asterisk by it. The old shift eight. Nick, you agree?
No. Unless we end up with a finals that we know we weren't going to get under regular circumstances. Listen, the NBA is unlike any other league. The champion is almost always one of the top three seeds. So as long as in the West we have the Lakers or the Clippers, or even if you want to expand it to the Nuggets that make the finals, maybe even the Rockets, and out East we have the Bucks or the Raptors or even the Celtics, then this is a standard championship. If somehow we end up with Heat and Mavs NBA Finals, then obviously something has gone awry here. But I, spoiler alert for the audience, what folks are trying to do by doing this is reverse engineer, either remove or add an excuse for LeBron. And by that, I mean this. If the Lakers win the title, folks want to be able to preemptively say, doesn't really count, doesn't have four rings, but they don't want to go all in on it. So if the Lakers don't win the title, they can say, oh, LeBron had the best team and failed again. So right now, be careful and be listening. See who wants to affix the asterisk and who doesn't. And it'll tell you a lot about where they're actually thinking the season's going to go. But no, if the season comes back, unless we have just total mayhem in the postseason, this counts as much as any NBA season was.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nick. I think there's two interesting storylines that I wouldn't put an asterisk on it, but I'm like, oh, that's a little bit weird. One is the Durant factor, right? So if the Nets, who I think are a seventh seed, and Durant comes back, it's been about 330 days since his Achilles surgery. So that would be interesting. The other weird thing is the Sixers. The Sixers are, I think, 29-2 at home. They're better than the Lakers at home. They're better than the Bucks at home. And they're atrocious on the road. They're worse than the Knicks on the road. So if we play in a neutral site and the Sixers somehow view that as their home court and all of a sudden they're the best team in the league, it's not an asterisk, but it's certainly weird.
I think it's completely unfair that Nick would say, well, if the one of the top three teams win it, then we shouldn't put the asterisk. But if one of the other teams win it, we should. And here's the deal. One of the biggest stories over the last couple of years has been load management. And that's because teams want their players healthy and well-rested in the playoffs. And when you think about it, if you have a few months off, well, you should come back energized, healthy, well-rested, and hungry. And the reason why I bring up hungry is because when you have an 82-game season, it gets monotonous, it's long, you lose focus. But if you have this type of break, and obviously this is because of something that we never could have predicted, but you have this type of break, everyone should come back energized. Everyone should come back hungry. And for the better teams, I think that allows the teams that are 4, 5, 6 seeded, that kind of allows them to get back in the mix. And I think that's unfair to the teams that have been good over the course of the season. That's why I think it should have an asterisk.
All right, let's move on. Jump back into the NFL now. 31-year-old free agent quarterback Cam Newton still searching for a football home.
That's good video.
And now even a backup home. A recent report has this Seattle Seahawks open to signing Cam. Brian, I'll throw it back to you. Would Cam Newton be a good fit as Russell Wilson's backup?
Well, I think Cam would be a really good fit in that offense for what they ask him to do, really pan the ball off and throw it every now and then. I think he'll be a terrible fit in Seattle because Russell Wilson just doesn't miss games. And if Cam Newton wants to prove and show that he can be a starting quarterback, Seattle's not the place to go. Russell Wilson hasn't missed a game in his career, and that's just not a great place for Cam, even though it may be a fit for him offensively.
I also want... Oh, Nick, you go ahead, buddy. Oh, it's back to the K-Man.
No, Wild, hey, your turn. Go ahead. Yeah.
I also want to see Anthony Air Gordon on the field. He's Russ's current backup. He's an undrafted free agent. And I was like, oh, who is this guy? Undrafted free agent. Then I looked at stats and started watching some YouTube clips. I'm like, this guy, my second favorite player after Jarrett the Javelin? He might be. Completion percentage at 72%. Passing yards, like 430 yards a game. He's got 48 passing touchdowns. I love this guy. So although I want Cam to find a home, I'm also a big Anthony Air Gordon fan, Nick.
Okay. Two major points. One, I did not expect to make. The first one is the Seahawks are the last place Cam Newton should go. Of all 32 teams, he would be better off going to Kansas City, even though they obviously have their quarterback. Oh. Because we have seen Mahomes miss games already. This would be 32 out of 32 for Cam to actually get on the field. New England and Jacksonville should be the first two places he tries to go because he could start. Then I would have a tier of Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, and Tampa. The three teams with old quarterbacks, we don't know if they'll make it through the season. And then like Buffalo or the Giants, the Rams, Denver, teams with young quarterbacks, we don't know how good they are. So Seattle would be 32. But the more important point is this, Jenna. America, rewind your DVRs, because after that little camera snafu, we found something out. Kevin Wilds refers to himself in the third person as the K-Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you hear that, America?
Everyone
and we went
that.
Back to him, and he's like, oh,
he didn't even
K-Man.
Make it up.
No, everyone does not know that. Everyone does not know that.
Oh,
everyone
yeah, yeah.
shouldn't know have known that. Me. And the fact that you call yourself in the third person the K-Man, back to the K-Man,
no,
time for the K-Man's take, might be the most embarrassing moment on, forget First Things First,
no,
FS1 history. I mean, burn the tapes like the NBA did the Jordan footage in 95. That was horrifying. Don't try to defend it, Wilds. Jenna, just go. Move us on,
no,
please.
It's a character. A lot of facets.
Jenna's moving on. On to the K-Man's Patriots now. You want a piece of their Super Bowl 51 victory? You better have a piece of a small fortune. Bidding for Robert Kraft's Super Bowl ring from that famous 28-3 comeback is currently over $1 million with 9 days to go. Nick, let's go halvesies on this. Come on, you and I don't do enough things together.
No. No, well, listen, you were talking off the air about, you know, how sad you were back in the day when your checking account only had four figures in it. So I understand you might be able to afford it. I haven't been an established television personality long enough to be able to go halvesies on it. But that's not the point. Here's the point. I can tell you who should buy it. Vladimir Putin. Because then he'll have one-third of Robert Kraft's Super Bowl rings. He already has the one he stole from him 15 years ago. Putin's got money. He might be the richest person in the world, if you believe some reports. Putin absolutely should buy this. Then he's one away from having as many Super Bowl rings as Robert Kraft. What do you say, K-Man?
Oh, good. Thanks for throwing it to me. Well, in all seriousness, this is raising money for a great cause, and I appreciate Robert Kraft donating his ring. I also appreciate Kyle Shanahan bidding over $1 million to try to get on the ring that he probably deserved, but he blew in the Super Bowl, right?
Wow. That is amazing.
That's a good line.
I certainly think Kyle Shanahan would love to have that ring. And I would also like to have my ring, too. So if Robert Kraft wants to sell the ring that he stole from us way back when in 05 when we played the Super Bowl, I'll take that. You know, it has to be a great thing to be an owner that can say, you know what, we have so many championship rings, I'll just sell one, and I'll still have
superfluous rings.
It must be a great thing. with all seriousness, congrats to Robert Kraft. I'm so happy that he's helping out Michael Rubin in the All-In Challenge. I'm actually filming my All-In Challenge video today, so I'm excited to be a part of that as well. I still would like that ring, I can tell you that.
Awesome. Oh, I'm sure. All right, let's move on to some baseball now. Check out recently retired 39-year-old pitcher CC Sabathia, who played 19 seasons in the league, retired last year, and then decided to get in shape. Absolutely shredded, though. Brian, I often get fooled by Photoshops. I'm told this one's actually legit.
Hey, listen, I saw the big fella. I saw him right before the Super Bowl. I saw him after the Super Bowl. The big fella was looking good. I saw him years ago, and he looked like a left tackle. Right now, he looks like he can play any position he wants, defensive end, because he is swole.
Nick, you know I love comebacks. We got Andy Pettit came back. Clemens came back. Tom Brady will eventually come back to the Patriots. I think that we can start the CC back to the Yankees rumor mill.
Oh, I totally disagree. And Jenna, of all the takes I've had that you hate, this is going to be your new most hated take. Some people should be fat. CeCe's one of them. I don't like this look. He looks better fat. Tony Soprano looked better fat. Tony Siragusa looks better fat. Some guys should just be fat, Jenna. This isn't one of them. Go ahead, Jenna.
And neither is this, and that was the worst take ever. 57-year-old Evander Holyfield getting back in the gym, looking like his old self, ready to take on Mike Tyson. Who you got your money on, Nick? Tyson, Holyfield.
Oh, listen, Evander, stay retired. You don't want those Tyson problems. Part 3 ain't going to go well for you, Evander. Stay retired, man.